listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net. Oh, my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Wheezy Webb can't find the puff for his whistle as the referee's decisions put Liverpool out of the FA Cup against Arsenal. Manchester City sweep past Chelsea, though, in a big week for them as they get set to take on Barcelona tomorrow in the Champions League. And Balotelli strikes a belter against Bologna as AC Milan and Clarence Seedorf keeps his job for one more week with a win over the mid-table Serie A side. Welcome to World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Deuce Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. We had goals galore from the Bundesliga. Four teams scoring four goals this weekend. And of course, Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund were two of them. We had a fantastic week end of FA Cup action. Everton through against Swansea. Sunderland get past Southampton. Manchester City sweeping past Chelsea, Arsenal just past Liverpool, and then we've still got Brighton and Hove Albion taking on Hull City tonight, and a postponement from the weekend as well. Sheffield Wednesday, their match delayed due to weather conditions, meaning that Charlton and Wednesday will meet on the 24th of February. Sheffield United through, and a possible all-Sheffield derby in the quarterfinals. I am on tenterhooks to see that we get past Charlton a week today. And of course, we had a fantastic weekend of Serie A action as well. Roma looked brilliant against Sampdoria. Mattia Testro with two strikes in their 3-0 win, and Destro rounding off a fantastically worked team goal. Pjanic with the other for Roma. Juventus carry on winning, though. They beat Chievo 3-1. Fiorentina losing to Inter 2-1. Struggles for Fiorentina once again. I'm sure Giancarlo Rinaldi not too happy this week. And the only Italian side in the Champions League got a win going into their big night against Atletico Madrid. Atletico with a 3-0 win this week, and Barca with a 6-0 win, and Madrid banging in the goals as well, as all of our top sides from Spain were able to get the 3 points they wanted. But it's England where we're going to start this week off, and I'm delighted to say that we have our first guest for the day ready and waiting to join us on the show. It was a controversial night at the Emirates on Sunday, but I'm pretty sure this man is fearless when it comes to discussing the controversial incidents from English football. He's one of our very favourites to have on the show, and no better man to kick off a Monday with than, of course, Mr. Jonathan Liu from the Daily Telegraph. Jonathan, a pleasure to have you on, mate. How was your weekend, first and foremost?
It was pretty good, actually. I was supposed to go into the indoor athletics at Birmingham and got a last-minute reprieve. So I managed to spend the weekend watching football, which I suppose is the idea.
I'm glad to hear you say that you did watch the football. Some people may have been tempted to sneak away from their responsibilities and maybe do something else. So I guess we can go anywhere we want with you in English football right about now. No better place to start than with the FA Cup first and foremost. The victory for Manchester City over Chelsea. Were you slightly disappointed about how easy Chelsea made it look for City at points?
Yeah, I really was. And I thought at half-time that you very rarely see Mourinho teams playing that badly in both halves. You expect some kind of uptick in fortunes. The fact that they just didn't, I mean, they didn't really seem to ignite. I mean, Salah came on, he made a couple of nice little runs, but it's just something didn't click from them. There wasn't there wasn't the desire there, which is very, very rare for a Mourinho side, and especially given what you know Mourinho had been going on about during the week. It was a very, very flat performance from them.
And especially as Chelsea were meant to be the ones that weren't being distracted, whereas City came out and it really looked like the Pellegrini side wanted to take momentum into the game coming up this week. It wasn't the strongest City side, but it was a pretty strong one that faced Chelsea.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was interesting. All the talk before the game was about how Chelsea had put out the side, how City had one eye on Barcelona, and yet it seemed to be City who came out with with all the momentum. Like I said, I mean, it was a strong side, not their strongest side, but I mean, now they've got a wealth of options before the Barcelona game. A lot of players, Jovetic has put his hand up, Milner's put his hand up. They've got some real selection issue now.
Is it good for City as well, because that last defeat was against Chelsea at the Etihad, and it's almost re-secured that home form and made the Etihad a fortress again by beating them in a very consistent and competent way.
Yeah, I mean, I think the defeat to Chelsea wasn't the cataclysmic disaster which perhaps it was painted at the time. They were doing all the right things, just weren't doing them very well. And the thing about Pellegrini, he's not a kind of knee-jerk reaction guy. He doesn't manage for tomorrow's headlines, as it were. He's always got one eye on the longer term. He kind of gauged that the fundamentals were sound, I don't even think they were motivated by revenge. I think it was just a case of getting the basics right, and as boring as it sounds, doing what they were doing, throughout most of the season, a little bit better.
Jonathan, with Pellegrini, after that loss to Chelsea, a few people did expect maybe the wheels to fall off a little bit, and a number of journalists came out and started talking about how Pellegrini hasn't won at the top level in Europe yet, really. What are your thoughts on Manuel? Because it is right to say that, he didn't win a title at Madrid, although he had a fantastic season with them, and he hasn't won a big-name league, really. So what do you think about Pellegrini and how he's handling all of this, especially at a pressure club like City?
Yeah, I think the pressure is really the unknown factor. Lots of people pointed at his record at Real Madrid, where he produced a record points total and came second to one of the greatest Barcelona teams that there's ever been. He's performed well at Malaga, he's performed well at Villarreal, but there's still this slight question mark. And what happens when you get to the pointy end of a league season or a big cup final? Is it good players or competent players start reacting in ways that you don't necessarily expect? And people react in those situations differently from how they would in halfway through the season. And it's that's the big question mark. I think one of the big issues was his personal record over Mourinho, which I think was played 9-7 going into Saturday's game. That will be a big psychological boost for him. But I think what still remains to be seen is whether, having your hands clasped around those metal handles, it's not the kind of thing that anybody can teach you, and how he deals with that, I think, defines whether his City reign will be any kind of a success at all.
It was him against Mourinho on the weekend, and him against Mourinho in the title chase, yet Mourinho is picking out Arsene Wenger for his end of season mind games, and the two of them have been in a real war of words this weekend. Classic Mourinho. Is Arsene rising to the bait, do you think, is it maybe uncharacteristic of him to be reacting in this way of Arsene Wenger, or do you think he enjoys it?
Wenger is always, the great myth is that Wenger just wants to get on with managing his team, and Mourinho is the one who keeps prodding him with a large pointy stick. Wenger loves these games just as much, and he's good at them. He's been manager of Arsenal for almost two decades now. He is good at this game, and he's made Mourinho look like a little bit of a schoolboy bully, to be honest. If it were the other way around, put it this way, if it had been Mourinho saying that Wenger had a fear of failure and Wenger had been the one who had lashed out in his press conference like that, people would be hailing Mourinho as a complete mind game genius, press conference genius. I think Wenger's done quite a a canny job there of riling Jose Mourinho, which is very hard to do. I think that came from the heart, not from a calculated mind game.
I suppose it makes Mourinho look even more foolish, the fact that he did fail this weekend, whereas Arsenal were able to get past Liverpool thanks a little bit, well, majorly in part, to some of the officiating problems from Howard Webb. The best in England, or a man that likes to see too many, not to be involved in the limelight too much that he ends up putting himself in it?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about Howard Webb, I mean, and I sat and crunched the numbers on this on Sunday evening, because, you know, there wasn't much on telly. I was looking at Howard Webb's stats before and after the World Cup. And obviously the World Cup final was his big breakthrough moment, because until then he was regarded as a good referee, not a household name. Now he's at the vanguard of the new breed of, you know, I don't like using the term, but celebrity referees. People know who he is, and people associate traits with him. And what you get with referees who are in the public eye and who know that their every decision is being scrutinised, you get something called, that behavioural psychologists call, admission bias, which is you prefer not to make a decision rather than to make a decision, even though making a decision would be the right thing to do. You, as they call it in America, you swallow your whistle. And he has done this again and again in big games. A big penalty decision. I was at West Ham Swansea, and there was a big penalty decision that he didn't give in favour of Swansea. Again, you know, he Arsenal Liverpool. You know, he should have given that penalty against Swansea, but he's thinking, can I give a big side two penalties in one half? Probably not. There was another incident at the end of Manchester United Tottenham. If it hadn't been the fact that he's aware that he's got a reputation as a United homer, he probably gives that penalty decision and United get a point, and David Moyes is under a little bit less pressure. So, the stats do back this up. Since the 2010 World Cup, he has been a lot less likely to give big decisions in situations that matter.
Do you think then if Liverpool hadn't had that initial penalty, that second one would have been given by Webb?
Yes, and if they hadn't had the first penalty, they get the second penalty, and if they get the second penalty, Gerrard gets sent off a few minutes later. I really think he's second guessing himself.
It's peculiar. Does it tarnish his reputation a little bit too much going into the World Cup as well? Because people are noticing this more and more from Howard Webb.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting, once you get a reputation as a referee, it's really, really hard to shake, because there's not much you can do. Your opportunities to influence a game are so fleeting that once people have this, and Howard Webb now, he's got a reputation as a bottler. You see how many red cards Howard Webb gives in the first 20 minutes of a game? Hardly any, virtually none, because you're generally perceived as spoiling the game if you give a red card in the first 20 minutes. Mark Klattenberg, he's got a reputation, fairly or unfairly, as somebody who likes to have a chat with the players, who likes to be a bit chummy with the players. And there's very little he can do to dispel that reputation he's got. The best referees in England at the moment, I think, are Andre Mariner and Michael Oliver. But once their reputation grows, once they have traits that are assigned to them, then they fall into the same trap as well. You read your press as a referee, of course you do, and you second guess it.
And I'm sure, especially Michael Oliver, very young referee, once he does get, as you say, some label attached to him, it's very hard to shake. Everton progressing through the FA Cup nicely as well. They've been drawn against Arsenal. One of probably the worst draws that they could have had from this whole FA Cup draw. To face Everton, a side that are really determined to prove that they do deserve to be in those ranks with Arsenal, with Tottenham, and with City, Chelsea, etc.
Yeah, and I think the league game between those two sides at the Emirates earlier this season, it wasn't a goal fest, but I thought it was one of the games of the season in terms of quality and excitement. And you've got two sides who just love attacking, who just love, you know, getting the ball down, playing it, and not passing it around and trying to work something, but just getting stuck into the opposition. I really love what Martinez has done at Everton, and I really do think they've got a chance of turning Arsenal over in a replay, perhaps, if not at the Emirates. I think they've got a real chance there.
And Arsenal will want to maybe have taken in a little more momentum rather than having Howard Webb help them out into this game against Bayern Munich. Do you think the cup games at all affect either Manchester City or Arsenal going into the big Champions League clashes this week?
I think it'll affect Arsenal more than Manchester City. I mean, like I said, City have a fairly strong idea of what they're trying to do and how they're going to do it. With Arsenal, I mean, under the bad old days, the last sort of 7 or 8 years, when they play well, they win. When they don't play well, they don't win. And while that sounds obvious, it's not the sort of form that wins your title, because you need to win games when you're playing badly. And I think it'll actually, you know, paradoxically give them a lot of confidence that the fact that they've played okay, but they've actually managed to grind out a win like they did against Liverpool. I think that'll give them a lot of confidence. Obviously, Bayern will turn them over because Bayern are Bayern. But in terms of the rest of the league season, I think they'll take a lot from that result.
No love for the Arsenal this week. Let's touch on City-Barca first, though, Jonathan. In terms of pressure, the City, because they are in unknown territory now, the knockout stages of the Champions League, against Barcelona, is the pressure off? Can they play kind of freer football without having to worry what the critics will say? Because not many people, people are saying that City can turn them over. But as I say, it's their first real venture into this stage.
Yeah, and I think they're in a real sweet spot at the moment, because they've got players who have played at that level. You know, Yaya Touré has played at that level. You know, James Milner has played. You know, he played brilliantly against Bayern. They've got players who can do it, but not yet the big name reputation that one of the big clubs of Europe has. So yeah, they can play a little bit freer. And the thing to remember, Barcelona are not all they're cracked up to be away from home in the Champions League. They've been turned over again and again. They had to fight their way out of a very dark spot against PSG, against Milan. They even lost to Celtic last season. Away from home in the first leg, City have a really, really good chance of turning them over.
Do you expect City to be maybe a little more physical? That, you know, I say people kind of pin that trait on the English game of being a fast but physical game. Do you think expect City to maybe try and rough up Barca and unsettle them from their passing play? Or do you expect City to just do what they do, play very quick, direct and aggressive football on the attack on the front foot?
I think Pellegrini will try and do it in English on Barcelona, if you know what I mean. But the same way that Arsenal beat them a few years ago. I think there's a reason that Negreira didn't play on Saturday. He'll be right in there. And it was interesting to see an interview that we did with Gerard Piqué on Saturday, in which he very freely admits, we don't like defending the ball in our own area. Our way of defending is to keep the ball and to frustrate the opposition. When the ball gets launched into our area, when we're having to defend crosses, we're not comfortable with that. And I think, you know, with the two wingers, I think Navas will play with the two wingers, with Negredo up front. I think they'll cause them a lot of problems, and I think they'll go on, you know, the traditional English route of two wingers, you know, curling in crosses, the two strikers.
Can Pellegrini, is there maybe a worry he might be emotionally involved in this, the getting past Barca after Barca pipped him to the title when he was Madrid manager and he had such an impressive season there, but ultimately that almost cost him his job. Do you think Pellegrini could get too emotionally involved in this?
I think playing Barca is one of those things that it's almost impossible not to get emotionally involved in. They talk about, you know, playing the 11 players, playing the occasion, you know, not playing the occasion. But when you're up against Barca, it is, I mean, it's the kind of thing that hits you emotionally. I don't think he'll get any more emotional than he would for, say, a Manchester derby or playing Real Madrid or any one of his other old clubs. But I think it's impossible to ignore the fact that you are playing Barcelona. And I think with good reason, because, you know, they have a very particular style of play that you have to adapt to. You can't just, I mean, we saw Pellegrini trying to play, you know, his natural game against Bayern, and they got absolutely stuffed. He's going to have to adapt.
It's going to be interesting how Bayern react against Arsenal as well. Bayern were pushed by Arsenal and maybe a little bit surprised about just how well Arsenal played at the Allianz last season in the Champions League. But there was a lot of emotion released after that game against Liverpool on the weekend. It seemed like almost like they'd, you know, secured fourth place again. Do you think maybe that release of emotion that settles Arsenal down to go on and take Bayern? Or do you think maybe it again puts too much emotion into this going into Wednesday's fixture?
I definitely think against Bayern, there's a real danger of getting too emotionally involved and too, you know, you get too much adrenaline through you. When you play Bayern, you've got to play out of the back with such nerves of steel that you actually kind of want to extinguish emotion. You've got to stick to any mistake you make. I mean, as soon as Arsenal get the ball as soon as Chesney gets it and it goes out to Mertesacker or Koscielny or whatever, Bayern are on you. There's five men around you. You have to keep a calm head in those situations. And it's all about having a game plan and being cool enough in the heat of the moment to stick to it, which is why I really don't think, I mean, I really don't give Arsenal much of a chance in this tie. They might nick a goal or two, but I think Bayern, the way they press so high up the pitch, I don't think Arsenal have yet the composure in their back five to be able to deal with that.
From what you've seen, Jonathan, obviously Bayern tore Arsenal apart at the Emirates last season. Do you think this Bayern side is even better equipped under Pep Guardiola to see off Arsenal in one leg and be able to go back to the Allianz and cruise control through?
Yeah, I mean, I think that'll be the aim. The thing about Bayern, they've scored more goals than any other side in the Champions League group stages in the first 15 minutes. What they do, they kill you off very early. And the intensity of those, I mean, what the physiologists call these short distance sprints in the first 15 minutes and certainly the first half of the game, very, very few sides can live with that. But the thing is, if Arsenal can get through the first half an hour and it's still 0-0 and Bayern, you know, maybe there's a natural lull or, you know, they take a breather, that in itself can give them a little bit of confidence. The first half hour is so crucial. If Arsenal could very easily be 2-0 down, we saw against Liverpool that they can be overwhelmed in the first 20 minutes. If they can weather that period, who knows?
Is Flamini's role then even more important than it has been already this season, or arguably one of Arsenal's best signings this year, to really cause problems and just break up play for Bayern?
Sorry?
Is Flamini's role one of the more important roles in the on the pitch for Arsenal in terms of breaking up that Bayern play and just harassing and being, you know, an absolute pit bull back there in the midfield?
Exactly, but I mean the thing is, Flamini's going to need support this time. There are games against, you know, maybe teams a little bit lower down in the Premier League where Flamini can fight, you know, he can fight fires on his own. He's going to need the likes of Wilshere. If he plays, he's going to need the likes of Arteta. He's even going to need the likes of Ozil and Cazorla to track back and help him. You have to defend against Bayern as a team. Flamini, obviously, you know, he's one of the best tacklers in the team, but he's going to need that support because after Flamini's got the tackle in, where's the ball going? Who's picking up the loose ball? It's got to have to be a team effort from Arsenal.
It's going to be a very big effort indeed down at the Emirates to do anything against Bayern Munich. Jonathan, we hope you enjoy the midweek Champions League action coming our way this week. I think it's fair to say that we do probably have the best games in the knockout stages coming up this week of Bayern against Arsenal and Manchester City against Barcelona. And we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed to get a little bit more Premier League conversation and, of course, see how the English sides are progressing through the Champions League, although it could be not very far if we the next time we talk's in a month or so time.
Cheers, Ollie.
Cheers.
Have a good week.
Cheers, Jonathan. Thanks a lot. Jonathan Liu there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about the Champions League games coming up and giving Manchester City, I think, a bit of love, but Arsenal not so much going into their match against Bayern Munich at the Emirates this Wednesday night. We're going to be talking about all of this as the show continues and, of course, going into the next couple of days as well, a huge Champions League returning week with some immense games coming our way. Big thanks there to Johnny Liu once again for joining us here on World Football Daily. One of the funniest men both off and on the mic here on the show. Always has some very peculiar bits and bobs that he comes out with, and it's always good to have a catch up with him and catch up after a very odd weekend of football, it has to be said. The FA Cup threw up a couple of surprises, I suppose. Sheffield United's comeback was quite big. Sheffield Wednesday's game, of course, was cancelled due to the weather, which I was gutted about. But, Raf, I'm not going to lie, the FA Cup draw once again has proved to be fantabulous for myself, because if Sheffield Wednesday do beat Charlton, we are having an all-Sheffield derby for a place in the FA Cup semi-final. I mean, for me, you know, doesn't get much better than that. We've been able to avoid a big side. We've got half a chance now of actually getting to Wembley. If we can get past Charlton, surely we should be able to beat the Blades. I'm really excited about the FA Cup now. I couldn't give a damn about City, Arsenal, whatever, yeah, war of words, blah, blah. Immediately, as soon as that draw was on, I was like, please give us Sheffield United or Nottingham. Please give us Sheffield United or Nottingham Forest. And boom, it came up. I was so happy. I'd like to say I was dancing around the living room, but I had quite the headache on Sunday, so there was no dancing going in, to be involved. But man, a weird weekend of FA Cup football, especially A, the war of words that continues, B, Howard Webb being from going from hero to zero as a referee, and see the lack of quality and performance that we got from Chelsea against Manchester City. I mean, we were watching that game. It wasn't the most interesting game of football I've ever watched, to be honest, but the City were just ruthlessly efficient more than anything else, and Chelsea really struggled, especially in that second half, to get anything out of that game. I was really surprised how Jose's side performed in that. I'd have thought there'd have been a lot more up for it than that one, especially when you think that, you know, it's City and Arsenal that have got the big Champions League games coming up this week, not Chelsea. You have to wait another week.
Right. Well, first off, I mean, I'm not sure if you covered this yet, Juice, or not, but Friday, I kind of go to my lunch from work, and I find out that Felix McGath is not going to Hamburg. Oh, no. He's going to Fulham. So I found that to be quite interesting, personally. The good thing about it is, I mean, from what I've read as well, you know, Jose Mourinho comes out and says that Chelsea deserved to lose, which you're right. I mean, they seemed like they were almost, look, we beat you once. I mean, if we don't beat you here, we're okay with that. And showed within 16 minutes when our man Stefan Jovetic comes out and scores a goal. I'm glad to see him score. You're right. This looked like it looked like Chelsea allowed City to be that ruthless side that we're used to seeing these days. I don't know. I would have liked to see more. As for the no call on Suarez, man, it's funny because I'm also reading a lot of stuff on and off the fields for the past couple of weeks where some people are saying, oh, you know, Suarez has redeemed himself and now it's just all about the play on the pitch. A call like that, look, Juice, you know me. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of Liverpool. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of Suarez. But to me, penalty, in my opinion. So, to me, it just makes you wonder what was going on. Maybe that, you know, they didn't get a chance to really see that play. I don't think so. It looks pretty clear to me. I think Arsenal were saved on that one, sir.
It's a stonewall penalty. I don't know. I don't know how you could even sit there, Raf, and say for me it's a penalty. It's a definite penalty. There's no question about it. Suarez is clearly brought down by Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and Howard Webb has a great view of it. I mean, somebody actually had the audacity to say, well, maybe Suarez in his body position was blocking the incident. I'm like, no, Suarez is the incident. Howard Webb is looking straight at it. He's got to have seen that. The only reason why I think Howard Webb hasn't done it is because, A, Luis Suarez's reputation precedes him, of course. And I've not seen somebody roll over that much since I last used to watch wrestling when I was about 12 and The Rock, who used to be able to take a stunner from Stone Cold like anybody. If Stone Cold hit a Stone Cold stunner on The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, then The Rock would like flip around the ring about 20 times and then lie unconscious. Yeah. That was exactly what I saw when Luis Suarez went down after Oxlade-Chamberlain's challenge. He goes down. There is a moment where he does do the leap, or slight leap into the air to indicate that the contact's been made. And then when he hits the ground, he performs quite a nice little acrobatic flip, almost kind of rolling on his nose at one point with his legs up in the air. And
like an upside down reverse triple axel or something like that. Yeah.
You know, you've been watching the Winter Olympics too much then. Yeah. but it's disappointing that Suarez had to go down like that. I think that's one of the reasons why he didn't get it. The other reason I think as well is that, you know, we've seen Howard Webb on a number of times maybe try and even up games at points. And he's also, you remember the World Cup final, Holland against Spain, and, you know, Holland should have had, you know, two two players sent off at least in that game before the end of it. For instance, the disgusting kind of kung fu kick. I think it was Van Bronckhorst, wasn't it? Who went in with it. No, Van Bommel, I apologise, who went in with his foot nice and high. It's square into the chest of Xavi. And
was that Nigel de Jong?
Was it Nigel de Jong? I thought it was Van Bommel.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's de Jong.
My mistake.
No worries. I'm pretty positive I remember seeing the...
But Webb did his...
Webb
did his best to keep, you know, 11 players on the pitch for each side that night. You know, he held off and held off from giving out yellows and reds until he could do it no longer almost. And I think that that's something that Webb almost... He likes to have an even game. You know, I think he thinks that it should be the football that wins football games and whatnot, rather than referees' decisions, rather than you know, penalty claims, things like that. So he likes to keep 11 players on each side on the pitch, and he doesn't, I don't think, like to have his decisions influence the game in a big way. Now, if that means that, you know, every so often he will shy away from maybe making that call. And I think that's what he did on Sunday. I think that he'd already given one penalty to Liverpool, and I don't think he wanted to see the headlines almost of, you know, two big calls from Howard Webb get Liverpool back into the game down at the Emirates. I really do think that. So, but what he's done instead is, by making the wrong call, is he's made himself all about the game anyway, and made the game all about him. Sorry, and his decisions, and everybody now is saying, how is Howard Webb considered one of the best referees in England, and he's going to be our representative at the World Cup when he doesn't give a clear cut decision like that. And however much Suarez kind of went over easily, that is a clear cut penalty. Oxlade-Chamberlain comes in, doesn't take any of the ball, takes the legs of the man. Suarez had control of the ball. It's not like he hoofed it away, miles away, to take the contact or anything like that. Suarez is genuinely trying to make a run, but also knows that challenge is coming as well. Happy to take the contact, go down and have the penalty, and Webb should have given it. And I feel really sorry for Liverpool, because they were the far better side by the end of that game as well. Mm-hmm. I really thought Liverpool were much better than Arsenal, created so many more threats on goal, and Fabianski really kept them in that game, and fair play to him, the Polish keeper.
Agreed.
Fabianski had a wonderful game of football. I mean, I think it's a bit funny how, you know, one game of football and immediately everybody comes out and starts saying, oh, well, you know, he should be a starter somewhere else, and Fabianski, you know, he's rotting in the reserves, if those are the kind of... I mean, we don't know what Fabianski's like week in, week out on the training pitch. He might have just had a great game. But on that sort of performance, yes, you could say that Fabianski should be playing or starting at a football club elsewhere. Same as Lindegaard at Manchester United. You know, there was a little bit of contention about whether it be De Gea or Lindegaard who should be the United keeper last season. De Gea has beat him out for that and has done very well in keeping that spot and done well between the posts for United. But you know, Lindegaard still stays at United, doesn't want to take a full-time role anywhere else, I suppose, and is hoping that he can one day break back into that United side. I'm sure Fabianski's just doing the same thing, especially with all the talk of Wojciech Szczesny being a poor keeper. But he was fantastic on the weekend, absolutely fantastic. Oxlade-Chamberlain had a good game as well, aside from... That was one thing that was quite interesting, because Oxlade scores and sets one up and generally had a pretty great game. And a lot of people are saying, get him on the plane to the Brazil. Do you think, though, if Howard Webb does give that penalty decision, Oxlade-Chamberlain is receiving all the plaudits that he has done? You know, suddenly he's the guy that gave away the stupid foul that let Liverpool back into the game. He's really escaped one here. Really escaped one, Oxlade-Chamberlain. And could easily have been walking out, rather than the hero, been walking out of the absolute devil to Arsenal fans after that game.
Sure. I mean, look, the other thing is that even if it was the second penalty of the game and they do put it away, Does Liverpool have enough to kind of take it to, you know,
Liverpool hold on. Liverpool hold on to that, Raf, without a doubt. Liverpool hold on to that result without a doubt, or at least go and win it. They were outplaying Arsenal. Arsenal were barely getting anything forward. Liverpool had the pressure and the momentum. You know what? You know when you get a side coming back from behind and it goes to 2-1 and suddenly, you know, the leading side is completely on the back foot, and then and you almost feel like, well, they're never going to be able to come off this back foot and get back on the front foot again. That was the feeling you had, I thought, with Arsenal on the weekend. Liverpool were dominating and controlling that game, and if that goes to 2-2, they at least take a draw out of the Emirates and it goes to a replay.
Are you not the slightest bit proud of Arsenal for scoring pretty much off of the set piece with Podolski's first goal.
Why would I be proud of that?
I mean, to me, I've never really seen them kind of get any. They're all about the free flowing play. They're all about, you know, walking it in. And I mean, to me, I was pretty impressed. I mean, all things considering, I absolutely despise both teams here. Yes, but I was really impressed with the way that they were able to kind of get something. Granted, it wasn't like it was right directly off the set piece. It came from a little bit of bumbling about after the initial ball in, but still. I'm just kind of impressed there.
No. All right. Well, come on, Brad. Know. Set pieces are bread and butter. That's why, you know, your relegation candidates live off the long ball, get a set piece and try and do something like that. It's your bread and butter of football. If you're not scoring from set pieces, then there's something wrong with you. Now, Arsenal obviously have the great quality and the great flowing play to be able to score wonderful goals. And we saw the incredible goals that they can score with that wonderful team effort against Norwich earlier on in the season. I'm not impressed by a team scoring off a set piece in any way, shape or form, though, Raf. Come on. You're just trying to throw out plaudits left, right and centre to these guys. Come on, what are you talking about? Well, oh, I'm so proud. Arsenal could do the most basic thing in football, get a goal off a set piece. Come on, Raf.
My Sunday league team could not do the most basic thing in football. We had about, like, maybe 12 corners, six to eight, you know, set pieces kind of in our opponent's half on Sunday, still could not find a goal. Some stalwart of a defensive showing from my squad on Sunday as well. You know, absolutely no goals, completely shut down the other team. No chance for them, really, but absolutely no scoring from us, which really sucked. But I'm okay. Two games this weekend, Juice. I got two games in me. I'm pretty excited. My legs pretty shot, but I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. I'm gonna be. You just watch, Juice. Next time you see me, whenever we see each other again, I'm gonna be svelte. You're gonna be impressed, and you're gonna want to go play some football.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about that, man?
I wait to see. I do genuinely hope, though, that we do see a younger, fitter, stronger Rafael Gonzalez next time I catch up with you, man. No.
Because you were a little bit hefty. That's just, we'll call you husky, Raf.
Hey, man, I can't talk in any way, shape, or form about that sort of thing. So I will be keeping my mouth shut at this point in time. The Christmas weight has very much embedded itself onto my podgy body, I think, at this moment in time. So all pumps to the gym, I think, at the moment. Arsenal will take on Everton, arguably one of the tougher draws that they could have got in the FA Cup. Man City will take on Wigan. Sunderland meet the winner of tonight's game, Brighton against Hull, and of course Sheffield Wednesday or Charlton will meet Sheffield United in the next round of the FA Cup. What did you make of the post-match stuff as well with Arsene Wenger and Jose Mourinho? Mourinho on Friday saying, am I afraid of failure? He, as in Arsene Wenger, is a specialist in failure. I'm not. So if one supposes he's right and I'm afraid of failure, it's because I don't fail many times. So maybe he's right. I'm not used to failing, but the reality is he's a specialist because 8 years without a piece of silverware, that's failure. If I did that in Chelsea, I'd leave and not come back to London. I don't fear anything in football, Jose Mourinho saying that on Friday. The Arsene Wenger coming out with his rebuttal after the game, after Chelsea had been knocked out of the FA Cup and after Arsenal had gone through against Liverpool. I'm embarrassed for him. Honestly, I'm more disappointed for Chelsea than me. It's an old school war of words again, isn't it? It's fantastic. Absolutely right. Fantastic for these guys to be back at it again, you know, in the papers. We always used to enjoy Ferguson getting in the mind games with Wenger, and Wenger seems to rise to the bait every so often. But I also get the feeling that Wenger quite enjoys it as well. Sure. He gets offended by a lot of the stuff that gets said, and I think he's very offended by what Mourinho said.
Well, and he puts himself out there so much, you know what I mean? Like, he's you know, he has a regular piece in various kind of media outlets and stuff like that. He writes for different websites and contributes to different websites and stuff like that. Obviously, he's not afraid to kind of talk to the mic after the matches and stuff like that. I do kind of wonder sometimes whether he kind of enjoys the spotlight a bit, enjoys, you know, being out there and being quoted and being, you know, asked questions and directly looked at and kind of scrutinized. And I think he also wants the attention. I think there's something inside me that makes me think that he wants to kind of become the new, you know, Sir Alex or something like that, to where he, where everything he says is kind of quoted and put in the papers, and in turn it takes off a lot of the pressure from his team. To me, that's slightly impressive too. I hate the fact, I can't believe I'm doing this, Juice. I am kind of talking at the Arsenal a little bit today, and I don't like it because I don't like Arsenal whatsoever. But
Hey, they score at set pieces now, so you know you've got to give them all the credit in the world, right, Ref?
I mean, they did. They scored off of a set piece. I'm pretty impressed with that. Okay. I mean, how often do you see Arsenal do that this season? Not often.
You are like the Homer Simpson when he's, I'm not easily impressed by things. Wow, a blue car. You know. I'm not easily impressed by these sorts of things. Wow, a goal from a set piece. Oh, my goodness.
But at the same time, look, what Jose said on Friday was pretty much true. I mean, I don't think he is really afraid of losing. Because he doesn't lose very often. And most of the time, he does, for the most part, get it right. So, and when he doesn't, you know, get his goals and make what he wants happen, he leaves. See, under Real Madrid and La Decima.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Touche. Yeah, I bet you weren't ready for that one, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. You've come prepared today, Raf.
Hey, I got some great facts and figures for you coming up in some Spanish football talk whenever you're ready, buddy.
We will dive into just a moment. The other thing I wanted to the other thing I did want to touch on as well is the reaction after that Arsenal.
Oh wait, you wanted to touch on Stephen Naismith, former Rangers man, getting the go ahead goal.
Still want to stay with Arsenal and Liverpool a moment, because the other interesting thing about it. Before the war of words continued between Wenger and Mourinho on Sunday night, was the reaction of the players. Sturridge sat on the ground. He was in tears after that game against Arsenal. The Arsenal players, on the other hand, I got the feeling like that looked like they were basically they won the FA Cup almost, it looked like, for them. But in all seriousness, that was a huge win. Huge win going into this week's game. Obviously, the Bayern Munich game coming up on Tuesday, but also the manner in which they were able to hold out, whether they got lucky or not. I think that's and the fact they probably did get lucky probably encouraged that sort of reaction from the players at the full time whistle, because they knew that they had by hook and by crook been able to keep hold of their berth into the next round of the FA Cup, and I think they knew they got away with one. It was relief. It was a big momentum boost after the results that last week, not really going their way, and I think it was also a great exercising of the demons, because there was so much pressure on them talking in the press about how this is the time that Arsenal always stumble. Oh, expect the big crash out of every single competition. You know, bye bye Premier League, bye bye FA Cup, bye bye Champions League in the next couple of weeks or so. And you saw how much that win meant to the players, just keeping at least that FA Cup dream alive, keeping that going. And
It was more than just the FA Cup, Juice. I mean, like, to be honest, when you get your ass beat, and that's what happened like last week by the same team, you need to come back and come back with a response. Sure, they probably got a little bit of help with that call. They did. Let's be honest, they got help with that call, but they did play their game. They did get two goals, and they earned those two goals, in my opinion. And like you said, Fabianski came in with some massive, massive saves. That kind of play does really lift the spirits, and they absolutely need that right now, considering who they'll be, you know, who's still left on their schedule, who's coming up down the pipe. And I mean, it only gets tougher from here. So every game is going to just, I mean, really ratchet up the pressure for Arsenal. They know that. They know that they need some positive momentum going into the Champions League coming up this week. Yes! Ooh, so excited about that. We'll get there. We'll get there, Juice. But, yeah, so, look, it's more than just the FA Cup win. Yes, they're excited about moving on, but it's also about moving on past the team that just completely dismantled you, completely embarrassed you, a week ago.
Yeah, as I say, it's the it's kind of that momentum of kind of proving everybody wrong at this moment in time. So I think that's quite important for Arsenal, just to silence the critics, because everybody was sat there, I think, at the Emirates waiting for Arsenal to stumble against Liverpool, maybe not get beaten as badly as they were at Anfield, but definitely kind of get knocked out. I think everybody was thinking, you know, Liverpool with no Champions League distraction or anything like that, that would be their time. Go to the Emirates, get a win through, knock Arsenal out of the FA Cup. Then they take on Bayern, probably get beat this week as well at the Emirates, out of the Champions League, therefore. And everybody's just waiting to kind of close the book on Wenger and say, you know, is this guy unable to win a trophy? Will it be 9 years now without one, etc., etc.? And kind of basically feed off Mourinho's comments that about being a specialist in failure. You know, I almost guarantee there was somebody who had a pre-written headline down there at the Emirates of, is Mourinho right, Wenger the specialist failure? After ready and set to roll out after Mourinho's said what he said, and after Arsenal were meant to be knocked out by Liverpool this weekend. It wasn't the case, and I think that's absolutely massive for momentum of just proving people wrong and keeping those doubters kind of quiet just for another few more days, few more weeks. I mean, they could get humiliated by Bayern, who bagged four on the weekend. Four teams bagging four, by the way, in the Bundesliga this week. But as I say, they could get humiliated by Bayern Munich this weekend. This midweek in the Champions League.
Two more things I want to touch on about this game. One, I did, and this is on to your point about how Arsenal celebrated this game. I think it was just before this, you know, this weekend, last week, I saw something online where basically it was a little soccer meme where, you know, it showed the Arsenal kind of celebrating their fourth place finish last season. Mm. And it just made the comment, like, the only team who can celebrate fourth place like none other or something like that. You know, just really kind of like jumping on their backs about how they, like, you know, made fourth place look so good or something like that, you know? And it was just really funny. It made me laugh. And obviously this is kind of the same thing. It's like, it's not even like they won the cup yet, but like you said, the way that they celebrated it, it seemed like they might as well be, you know, champions of Europe or something like that. But, and then the other thing I wanted to kind of ask you about is, do you think that now that, you know, Liverpool aren't even distracted by FA Cup or, you know, cup matches, does that kind of give them any more edge looking into the title race? Jose Mourinho came out last week and kind of said,
Europe.
They don't play in Europe. Yeah, they don't play in Europe. So surely they have an edge in the title race. This obviously gives them a little bit more attention to pay towards that league, right?
Maybe. But I also think that this is going to be a tough loss for Liverpool in terms of mentally. You know, Brendan Rodgers, they've been on a bit of a wave. You know, they managed to get a scrappy but big win down at Fulham in midweek. Of course, they battered Arsenal the week before that. That's a big high that suddenly just gets chipped off quite a bit by getting knocked out of the cup. And you saw the way the players took it. Now, if I'm Brendan Rodgers, I'd be delighted that the players were so disappointed about how they took it. But I'd also be wary that could be a mentality that stays in them for the next few weeks or so. Now, it could pay off that they've got a bit of a chip on their shoulder. They feel that they shouldn't have gone out of the FA Cup, and therefore, you know, they'll come out fighting stronger and harder than before. But at the same time, Liverpool could also be like, well, that just didn't go our way. You know, things stacked against us, so we can't have success this year. Now, obviously, getting top four for Liverpool is still a great success for them this season, and no doubt they deserve to be there. But you just hope that the mentality and the disappointment of the loss doesn't kick into this Liverpool side and discourage them from playing and pushing on and going for that Premier League title, because they are firmly in the race to me. It's too hard to tell. I just think Rodgers will be worried that this has been a big knock to the confidence that was kind of sky high. And any knock to sky high confidence starts the pattern of your confidence dropping slightly. And that's a mentality that he'll be desperate to stamp out of this side. We need to talk about, you touched on it earlier, Felix Magath now joining Fulham to take over from the dismissed Rennie Meulensteen. I got about six or seven text messages and emails and whatnot from friends and fellow kind of sports broadcasters and journalists saying, you know, Fulham, what a joke, what an unbelievable joke this club is. I mean, you feel sorry for Rennie Meulensteen, don't you? You know, Fulham bring in like directors of football, people around him, keep adding to the kind of staff who can have their input, and then Meulensteen gets the chop when things aren't going well. But things haven't been going well for a long time, and Fulham have removed now one of their best players. This is also Meulensteen who managed to get them almost get them a point up at Old Trafford. I mean, they came so close. And he got.
But is that really an accomplishment? Getting close at Old Trafford at this point, this year, no, not so much.
For Fulham, a team in the bottom of the table, pretty much, to almost get a win at Old Trafford and to be able to come back and salvage something in the last minute.
Because I think that Fulham's their bogey team,
you're completely wrong on that. So, but in all seriousness, though, do you not think that? You know, a manager does that, and then this is a struggling Fulham side. You can't say that they get a draw at Old Trafford and suddenly they're expected to say beat Liverpool at home, and they almost got a point against Liverpool at home. You know, this is a Liverpool side that has battered them a couple of times at Craven Cottage, and that was arguably one of the best performances that Fulham have put in against Liverpool in the last few years. This is by no means a manager that is, you know, not trying his best and doing his best with the resources that he's got, and he's not got great resources at Fulham. As I say, they've gone and sold or loaned out their best player, a player who surely would be integral to them staying up, Dimitar Berbatov. You know, for me, if you put Berbatov in with a finisher like Mitroglou, exactly what Darren Bent was meant to be but hasn't been for them, that's a fantastic partnership to have Berbatov pulling the strings and Mitroglou finishing with Sidwell holding and Lewis Holtby, adding a bit of creativity down the centre of the pitch from midfield. I mean, that to me is a strong spine of a team. I know Steve Sidwell's not, you know, the be-all and end-all of defensive holding midfielders, and he's no Yaya Touré or anything like that, but he's an experienced, accomplished Premier League player, and shouldn't be kind of people turn their nose up at him maybe a little bit too quickly, Steve Sidwell. I think he's still a solid player and a guy that you would be happy to have in a side when the kind of the chips are down. You know that Sidwell's going to be rallying for you. And I think Mullenstein, to be given the chop the way he has been, at this point in the season as well, again, it reeks of the Mick McCarthy mistake that Wolves made, in that, you know, McCarthy would have given his all to keep Wolves up. They let him go February time, when there's nothing that a new manager coming in can do to change things in terms of transfer window. Fulham have been lucky that McGattis come in and taken this job, because I don't think there would be many people that would be clambering to take the Fulham job. And,
well, that's just it, though.
But they've brought in one of the most eccentric guys in world football, the fitness freak McGatt, who had a purpose-built mountain built in the training ground at Wolfsburg. And he used to make them run up McGatt Mountain until they could run no more. And things like this, you know. Fulham aren't a side that are struggling for fitness right now, which Felix McGatt wants in his sides to be ultra-fit and be able to, you know, sprint the 90 minutes and whatnot. But that's not what they're struggling with. They're struggling with a lack of what appears to be creativity, but that might be suppressed now with the arrival of Holtby. They're struggling from a lack of goals, because Darren Bent hasn't done it, but if Mitroglou starts to play, then that starts maybe drying up. And they're struggling for what looks to be as well just a little bit of confidence. They don't look very confident at all. I mean, aside from the trip to Old Trafford, I've not seen Fulham play with real confidence in a very long time. And McGatt isn't the kind of guy that comes in and fills you with confidence. He's got a reputation. He's got a reputation for being very eccentric. I don't think that would give a player confidence. He's got a reputation of being a ruthless worker, which, again, I think that, you know, there will be a case of people in that Fulham dressing room will be saying, well, I am working physically as hard as I can. If somebody comes in and tells me to work harder when I physically can't, it's just going to depress them. It's just going to bum them out. I think this is a very sketchy appointment from Fulham in terms of bringing in McGatt. And I think Hamburg have probably dodged a bullet, even though they have sacked Van Marwijk and obviously are having an absolute torrid time in the Bundesliga at the moment as well.
I'm pretty sure that you said last week that McGatt is also somebody who has a bit of a reputation of saving teams and kind of bringing teams away from the drop or bringing teams to the next level. And I think that, I mean, this might be kind of reading way too much from the Fulham, you know, press release. And I didn't get one from them, but I read the story as soon as it came out, and it might as well have been, you know, well, it was straight from, you know, the words of the Fulham owner, and press release guys and all that stuff. But I almost get it. I do, because one, this is a man who does have a bit of a reputation for bringing potential and bringing teams to their next level. And at this point, Fulham need that. They need something that are going to get them up and out of the bottom. They have plenty of potential in that squad. He recognized that. I think the owners recognize that as well. The owners also recognize that, look, all these close results are great and grand, but they're not getting us points. And at this point, we need points to get up off the bottom. And there's only, I don't even know how many points left in available for them in the season, but they need to make the most of every single league game that comes up. There's really no room for error. There's no room for close games at this point. It needs to be wins. It needs to be 3 points where they can get them. And I think that Felix Magath might be able to come in and really energize it. Just give that squad enough kind of drive and positivity, to kind of come out and really play their best. I think it is. Look, I hate the idea of kind of chopping and changing multiple times during the season and kind of having, a short-sighted view of success, I guess. But at the same time, I somewhat understand it, and it does seem a little bit refreshing to me as somebody who has a bit of a soft spot for Fulham because of the Americans who have played there. I like the fact that they're fighting tooth and nail to kind of stay up in the Premier League. And if I'm a supporter, I can almost understand it, because for me, Musselstein was a glorified assistant coach at this point. I mean, he's had some success at United. Yes, he's been with some great people, but I don't know of any real examples of when he's done it all by himself and when he's presented a team of his own, really. So I would like to think that this appointment brings a bit of a change about it, Fulham. And I don't think that Magath is going to come in and just drill this team into the ground with fitness. I mean, like you said, there's just not enough time. He has to work with what he has right now.
But that's what I mean. There's not enough time for Magath does this every time, though. He has a pattern of coming in and being ruthless about fitness and these intense training regimes. This is how he works. He's not going to change his working style to meet Fulham's needs at this point in time. No manager would go into a job and say, I'm going to work under you, almost. They all want to put their own personal twist on it, because that's what's supposedly worked for Magath over the last few years. So I don't see Magath going in and dropping his ethics, his work ethic and his style of management and coaching. I think it's, if anything, because he can't do anything in the transfer window, it's going to be twice as intense and twice as bad for these players who are going to be coming in with it and suddenly having... Look, he's going to have like the Paolo Di Canio style attitude to work and ethics, except without the fear that Di Canio almost kind of was able to rule with in the lower divisions, and it doesn't pay off in the Premier League anyway when you see that. Players will revolt against Magath, I think, especially in the Premier League. We saw it with Sunderland. Why would it not happen at Fulham as well? You've got even bigger players there as well. Your Darren Bents, your Lewis Holtbys, your, now your Mitroglous as well. I think this is going to be a big shock to Fulham's system. I think it's going to be a very difficult last 12, 13 games or so in this Premier League season. That's all they've got as well. 12 games left. That's not very long, Raf. You're staring at 36 points now for Fulham available.
That's right. There
it's,
you go.
It's not a long period of time left at all. It'd be interesting to see what happens when Felix Magath does come in to Fulham and how styles may change. Raf, before we are running out of time here, but we should talk briefly either about a little bit of Italian, a little bit of Spanish, or we should look at some Champions League, man. Where do you want to dive into?
Well, we really should jump into Champions League, but let's put that off till tomorrow. I will put off just one more day, and we'll try to get that Champions League show up as early as possible. So that way, if you want to, you can listen to it before the matches, maybe. But what I really do kind of want to point out at the weekend that really stood out for me, Juice, was the three-way race for the title in La Liga. Obviously, Atletico Madrid scoring three goals. Real Madrid scoring three goals, but what? Barcelona, six goals. what's impressive about Barcelona's game was that they had, I think, four or five different assist makers for these goals. And Leo Messi getting two of those assists. It's one thing to see Leo get on the score sheet, you know, not once, but twice. But also to get two assists in this game and then see just a host of other players get, you know, get all over the pitch, get involved, be part of the attack. I mean, like I said, every player basically had a different, person to receive an assist from. And to me, that's really impressive. Iniesta, for me, had a brilliant game, and he didn't get an assist until the last one with Neymar. And Neymar, what an incredible strike at the end. I would be a little bit worried, because it feels like, you know, Barcelona are finding their stride again, are finding their form a little bit, and looking like they can start getting their wheels going. And you know, I think it was you who kind of talked to Graham Hunter a year or two ago, and they told us, or he told us, that, you know, Barcelona don't train for the beginning of the season, the middle of the season. They train to peak towards the end. And it's looking like they are starting to reach for that peak. And it seems about right timing, right? I mean, it's coming down to the knockout phases of the Champions League. Like you said, the end of the season is really in sight at this point. They are going to need to really kind of find that form and start just putting it all together.
Yeah, but the boring thing about Barca is that they never really seem to lose that form. You know, the trouble is for me is that it's just, you know, it's slower or quicker that they play at, and when it's slower they'll win 4-0, but it won't be as entertaining as watching them win 4-0 when they've got a bit more pace in their play. I mean, you go back to December time when we were saying, oh, you know, no Messi, oh, what's going to happen? 6-1 win against Celtic, a 3-0 win against Cartagena in the Copa del Rey, a 5-2 win against Getafe away from home, a 4-0 win against Elche in La Liga. I mean, it's not like they've been slowed down when it comes to scoring, except when they played Atletico Madrid and that kind of quite shock result against Levante. They had the 1-1 draw against Real Sociedad in the Copa del Rey last week, but this is not a Barca side that have ever really struggled to find the net this season. You know, it's they've been an excellent side, and aside from maybe the slip up as well, you look at the Bilbao result in La Liga round about the December period. But to me, it's not. You never worry about Barca being, oh, are they losing it yet? They're too good to be losing it. And to have Messi back before this Champions League game, of course, is absolutely huge to take on City. And getting a 6-0 win against Real Vallecano is obviously a great result to take into that. But if I was going into this fixture with City this week, I would much rather have played Chelsea on the weekend than have played Real Vallecano and battered them. There's no test. You know, it gets the motivation boost up. But do you think
your point? That's interesting.
Do you think City would be after beating Chelsea and comfortably beating Chelsea really as well in the FA Cup? Do you think City will have a bigger buzz? The fact that they've vanquished a team that are going to be their rivals for Champions League, FA Cup, and Premier League, and then they've been able to knock them out of the FA Cup. They've silenced Mourinho. They've done it in a confident style. They've exercised the demons of that loss on the Monday night to Chelsea at the Etihad in the Premier League, which is a big boost for them. And they've defeated a tough opponent. Barca have spanked six past a Real Vallecano side that is struggling in La Liga this year, that's in the relegation zone. And we know, Raf, that the gap between those top two, now three, in Spain compared to the rest of that pack is phenomenally huge. Yeah. So Barca don't get tested that often in La Liga. The fact they get six past somebody who's at the bottom of La Liga at home, I'm not looking at that and thinking, oh, what a huge result going into the Champions League game. It gets the goal-scoring boots on. It gets everybody a nice fresh legs run out. Gets them warmed up for the midweek fixture, sure. But City will have a huge energy buzz going into the game at the Etihad. The fact that they were able to reclaim the Etihad back from Chelsea as a bit of a bastion in an important FA Cup game is a big deal, I think. And I have no doubt that that City will have the momentum going into this over Barca. Unfortunately, Barca just have that quality. And, you know, you look at the weak links that there are in City's side. You know, the fact there is going to be no Aguero, which is disastrous, really, for them. Well, he's doubtful, but I would put my money down on Aguero not playing in this game, for sure. The fact that James Milner, who is a great battler, is going to be out for this. Fernandinho should be back and fit for it, but you question, you know, just how fit he's going to be. That pairing of Fernandinho and Yaya Toure is going to be essential to any success that City have. But you look at Clichy, you look at De Michelis, who's going to be expected to partner company at the back. I just wonder, you know, we've spoken about how that back four of Barca is susceptible, but Dani Alves, Puyol, Piqué and Jordi Alba sounds a lot better as a back four than Clichy, De Michelis, company and Zabaleta, just because that left side with De Michelis and Clichy is so much weaker than company and Zabaleta.
I'll even take Clichy. I know you've been harsh on him recent, or especially this season, but I'll take Clichy. It's just Di Michelis who's, for me, just he's the Colo Torre of...
Oh, that's harsh. Come on.
Yeah, no, I know. Is it too harsh? I don't know. Maybe. But yeah, to me, he's a Colo Torre of Man City.
That's a little harsh. I mean, sure, he's the guy with the old legs and he's not performing very... yeah, he probably is the Colo Torre, in fact. Yeah, no, well, I'll give you that.
All right.
But and also, I think, you know, if it's Jovetic that plays, I mean, who would you have? Negredo or... with Negredo, sorry. Jovetic or Dzeko going into this?
That's a tough one. I mean, I want to go with Jovetic just because
I
like the player. I feel like he might be coming into some form finally, and you know, because of the fact that he just, you know, he did find his scoring boots against Chelsea. I'd like to think that he's good, but at the same time, Dzeko. You know what? Actually, yeah, I am going to go with Jovetic and then bring Dzeko off the bench because he is a super sub who comes off and can really nail it to Barca. So yeah, actually, I'm going with Jovetic to start. Dzeko coming off on the bench.
I worry about experience, ref. You know me. I want my players in those big games to know what they're doing and not be feeling the pressure. I think Jovetic starting against alongside Negredo might not be the best. You want ruthless out-and-out strikers against Barca that are going to take their chances. And Jovetic, to his credit, took his chance on the weekend. But I would go with Dzeko at this point. I would really go with Dzeko. I mean, who I would go with right now would be Mario Balotelli. You know, if he can walk up to a ball 30 yards away and just lash it into the top corner as he did on the weekend, I mean, what a strike. What a strike. You won't see better than that this season from Mario, at least.
It was so cool. You know what I mean? Like, and not like I'm not saying like, oh, that was so cool, man. Like, such a cool head, such a calm like demeanor when he just received the ball, noticed that the guy in front of him, it was almost like a slap in the face. You know, it's almost like he felt like he was disrespected that he was given so much room, and then all of a sudden he just lashed at this ball and just, oh, what a strike! What a strike! The way the keeper came out and running at his, like, really, keep, what are you going to do? I mean, are you expecting somebody to kind of just whip a ball in like that from that far out? No chance of saving that.
Yeah, but I think, you know, defenders should have closed him down. That's...
Oh, no question. No
nobody
question.
Goes near him. He just picked it up, looked up, and just kind of nonchalantly like, yeah, I'll have this, go on then. And just gave it a whack. Oh, fair play to him. Absolute fair play.
And he knew it as soon as it left his boot, too. He just kind of started walking off. If you watch the replay, go to our Facebook page if you haven't checked seen this goal yet from the weekend. Facebook.com/WorldFootballDaily. Check it out. He strikes his ball, and he knows it immediately. And he just starts walking off. Like yeah, that's me. Like, I got this.
I love his attitude, though. He doesn't celebrate when he scores goals because he's a goal scorer and that's what his job is. I think that's such a great idea. What was it? He said, you know, a waiter doesn't celebrate when he puts the food down on the table and gets the order right. So why should I celebrate when I score goals? Just brilliant. And it's such a shame that he was topped this week for the goal of the week, not just in Europe, but in Serie A in general. If you get a chance, check out the Livorno-Cagliari game. This was a crazy game. Three settings off, three goals. Livorno winning 2-1. But Emerson's strike from that, whoo! Yeah, it's better than bad boy Balotelli's, let's put it that way. And it takes a lot to beat that Balotelli strike. And that's coming from
there's
a Milan fan
as well.
There's
some great goals coming out of Serie A and or Italian football in general. I mean, with the Coppa Italia with Fiorentina, Udinese, there were some great goals in that as well. I mean,
Destro's second against Sampdoria in that 3-0 win as well. That was that was just a wonderful piece of all-round play. Fine finish from Destro. Roma with that big 3-0 against Sampdoria, just trying to keep the pressure on Juventus, who didn't stumble this week, a 3-1 win against Chievo. The problem is, though, for Lazio, losing to Catania in Serie A action this weekend. Milan beat Bologna, of course, on Friday night. And on Saturday, Fiorentina losing to Inter at home. That was a huge win for Inter. Palacio and Icardi with the goals there. Cuadrado scoring for Fiorentina, but not enough to salvage anything out of that game. We've got plenty to talk about this week. Champions League is coming up this weekend. Of course, we've touched on City against Barca. We'll be into that, I'm sure, a lot tomorrow, as will we be looking at Leverkusen against PSG, Arsenal against Bayern Munich, and of course, Milan taking on Atletico Madrid. I don't have high hopes for that one, though. I'm going in there with a pleasant sense of defeatism, as is the British way, Raph. And I hope you'll be joining us to have a look through all the games coming up this week on Tuesday and Wednesday in the Champions League as we continue Europe's best club competition. Is it better than the Copa Libertadores? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 31090984. It's the rant line and the Facebook page as well. A big thanks to Johnny Liu for joining us here today. We're going to be back with more top guests all this week here on WFD on a big week of Champions League football. A huge thanks to Raph, as always, for joining me. And a massive thanks to you, the listener, that keeps us going here at WFD. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. We'll try and even get the show up even earlier so you can enjoy the Champions League preview to the big games tomorrow. Take care. We will see you on Tuesday. Oh, sweet England, we love you. Oh, sweet England, we love you. Yeah.